This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Responding to rhetoric. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Thursday, May 17. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Despite threats by a North Korean official to cancel next month's summit between Kim Jong-un and President Trump, the White House offers a measured response.
The Justice Department is being encouraged to investigate the mayor of Oakland for tipping off illegals about a raid by ICE agents.
A Senate committee supports the findings of U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia tried to boost the presidential campaign of Donald Trump.
And the new group of people known as the indoor generation.
25% said they were spending between 21 and 24 hours inside. So if you just, that's just, you're not going outside at all.
Laura Kelly at the Washington Times on a new study about the amount of time we spend indoors. That story in about 20 minutes. President Trump is still planning to meet next month with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, despite remarks by one of Pyongyang's senior diplomats that the summit could be canceled if North Korea is pressured to dismantle its nuclear exchange, or rather its nuclear arsenal, in exchange for economic benefits. While proceeding with summit plans set for June 12 in Singapore, Mr. Trump and his foreign policy team yesterday also refrained from firing back with tough words of their own. Here's White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
The president is very used and ready for tough negotiations. And if they want to meet, we'll be ready. And if they don't, that's okay, too. We'll continue with the campaign of maximum pressure if that's the case.
The State Department says Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke to his South Korean counterpart as part of a broader effort to coordinate the summit. The subdued response by the White House came after North Korea's angry denunciation of the joint military drills between the U.S. and South Korea, which involve F-22s, some of the most advanced American fighter jets. President Trump is encouraging the Justice Department to investigate Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf for obstruction of justice after she tipped off immigrant communities about a raid by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. Mr. Trump made the comments in a sanctuary state roundtable at the White House yesterday that included California mayors and others said to be directly affected by what the White House calls California's dangerous sanctuary city laws.
We have people coming into the country, or trying to come in. We're stopping a lot of them. But we're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals.
The mayor, Ms. Schaaf, warned of imminent raids in February in the San Francisco Bay Area. The deputy director of ICE said those warnings compromised the safety of agents and allowed targets of the raid to flee. The mayor of Fresno, Lee Brand, expressed difficulty in capturing and punishing illegals accused of crimes such as members of the MS-13 gang. A Senate committee supports the findings of U.S. intelligence agencies that Moscow tried to boost Donald Trump's presidential campaign by hacking and spreading misinformation. The conclusion by the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday is a bipartisan one that differs with the position of a House panel. The Senate Intelligence Committee's conclusion is part of a probe that began more than a year ago into alleged Russian interference in the election. Here's Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
They also used social media in ways that were unprecedented and scanned or intervened in our electoral systems.
President Trump and many of his supporters have repeatedly dismissed the idea that Moscow meddled on his behalf. A House Intelligence Committee report released earlier this year said Russia did not aim to boost Mr. Trump's chances of winning. Russia's alleged role in the election is a central part of the special counsel's investigation, something Mr. Trump calls a witch hunt. It is 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Thursday. The political cross currents that defined the 2016 presidential election are in overdrive once again for the upcoming midterms. As Josh Kraushaar at National Journal says, That's working-class white voters swinging towards President Trump while upscale suburbanites defect from the GOP coalition. He says this November election will feature radically different types of campaigns for control of the two congressional chambers. One, a very winnable Democratic battle for the GOP-leaning suburbs in the House versus the treacherous task Democratic senators face wooing Trump voters in conservative states to have a shot at taking the Senate. Josh, set this up.
Well, there are two different battlegrounds for the House and the Senate. The lion's share of seats that Republicans are defending in the House are in suburban, affluent congressional districts that Republicans hold, where Donald Trump is not very popular at all, and in some districts he's downright toxic. But in the map for the Senate, it's a whole lot different. Not only are the states that are the big battlegrounds in very Republican areas, you know, Montana, West Virginia, Missouri, North Dakota, among them, but they're also very working class, very pro-Trump states. These are not business-friendly states as much as they are populist Republican states. So when you look at the polling, when you look at the way the campaigns are being run, a lot of Republicans actually think Trump is the key to them winning even more seats in the Senate, even though he's as toxic as he is in many of these same House races. So Democrats are looking in pretty darn strong position in taking back the House. I would say it's more likely than not at this point. But the mood for Republican senators has gotten a lot better lately, and you're seeing some increased optimism that Republicans can actually pick up a seat or two in the Senate.
Wow. Is this all based on support or non-support of the president?
Well, one of my colleagues, Cook Political Report editor Amy Walter, had this really fascinating observation recently that the Republican candidates' performance in races that have been contested across the country are remarkably similar to Donald Trump's job approval in those same areas. So we're in such a partisan, such a polarized time, Gordon, that it's hard to really create any distance from Trump if you're a candidate. So if you're in a district where Trump isn't well-liked, a suburban district in a blue state, it's hard to create that distance, and you're probably toast. If you're in a red state like Montana or North Dakota or West Virginia, though, it's actually harder for the Democrats because they're going to need to win over those Trump voters and get some people to get people to split their tickets.
Yeah, you wrote too the type of pro-business, socially moderate members that have been a critical part of the GOP caucus are becoming extinct. Explain that.
We are seeing a realignment. We saw it in 2016 in that suburban Republican voters. Some of them voted for Hillary Clinton in parts of the country, especially, you know, big suburban metropolitan areas. And we actually saw small towns and rural areas getting even more conservative and more people voting for Donald Trump than they've voted Republican in the past. And those trends are continuing into the 2018 midterm election. So usually when you have a big wave year or a very decisive political verdict in the midterms, it goes all in one direction. In this midterm election, I actually think it's very likely that you could see the House getting a lot more Democratic, but the Senate actually getting more Republican, and then the two chambers going in opposite directions.
Wow. We're speaking with Josh Krauss-Haar, politics editor at National Journal. You referenced, too, the congresswoman from Northern Virginia, Barbara Comstock. I thought her story was telling about the lack of money she's getting for her bid.
Yeah. So this is a great example of how the political environment in a district matters a lot more than the strength of a candidate. Barbara Comstock was one of the more politically savvy members of Congress. She worked for Mitt Romney. She just understands politics better than anyone. And she also won some really tough races of her own, including in 2016. But the political environment in the Northern Virginia suburbs has gotten so bad for Republicans that one of the top Republican outside groups, the Congressional Leadership Fund Super PAC, is not giving a cent to help her out and help save her seat because they think her race is lost.
Wow.
And they've told her that, and there's been a lot of bad blood between the two just because of that lack of support. But it's interesting that the party committee, the institution that's supposed to help incumbents that are on the ballot, is spending, or at least is reserving over $6 million in ad time to try to help save her seat. But the people who are the most realistic, the most cold-blooded, if you will, in assessing the House map, are almost writing off some of these suburban seats because they're just too anti-Trump. They're swinging too much in a Democratic direction for them to save in the midterm election.
It's Josh Krauss-Haar, politics editor at National Journal. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a GOP-led Senate committee is backing federal intelligence agencies, finding that Russia tried to boost Donald Trump's presidential campaign by hacking and spreading misinformation, a bipartisan conclusion that breaks with the House panel's position. Virginia Senator Mark Warner.
I've heard nothing to contradict anything from the ICA, particularly in terms of the fact that Russians massively intervened in our elections to the purpose of helping Mr. Trump and hurting Hillary Clinton.
President Trump and many of his allies have repeatedly dismissed the idea that Moscow meddled on his behalf. President Trump has officially disclosed his reimbursement to his lawyer, who paid a porn actress to hush up her affair or claims of an affair. The filing shows he paid Michael Cohen between $100,000 and $250,000 for expenses occurred in 2016. The White House stated in a footnote to the filing that it was listing the payment in the interest of transparency and contended it did not have to make the disclosure, but the Office of Government Ethics says Trump should have revealed the payment in a previous financial disclosure. The Stormy Daniels payment is a potential legal problem for the president because it could be seen as an illegal campaign contribution. Michigan State University has announced a $500 million settlement with more than 300 women and girls who say they were assaulted by sports doctor Larry Nassar in the worst sex abuse case in sports history. Michigan State and lawyers for 332 victims announced the deal after negotiating with the help of a mediator. It's not clear how much money each victim will receive or how the university will pay the bill. Women in the U.S. are having children at the lowest rate on record, with the number of babies born in the U.S. last year dropping to a 30-year low. The CDC says 3.85 million babies were born last year, down 2% from 2016. Well, maybe NJ Transit could learn a lesson from a Japanese rail company which apologized after a train left a station 25 seconds early, the second such case in months. The operator called the inconvenience it placed upon its customers truly inexcusable. Japanese trains have a reputation for extreme punctuality, and it turned out that there were indeed still people hoping to get on board. Left on the platform, they complained to the rail operator, and an official apology was issued.
Wow. 25 seconds early, that does not allow for the way, like, officials on the platform jam people into those trains in Japan. Have you seen those pictures and videos?
Oh, it does happen, but it's just funny. 25 seconds,
yeah,
could you imagine?
That is remarkable. I mean, who wants to be to a meeting at work 25 seconds ahead of time, right? Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. How's this for a stat reflecting today's society? About 25% of Americans hardly ever venture outside. New research finds that in an age when nearly everything can be found and delivered online, it's hardly surprising to discover what some call an indoor generation. More from Laura Kelly, health reporter at the Washington Times. Laura, give us some findings.
25% said they were spending between 21 and 24 hours inside. You're not going outside at all.
Wow, that's work-related, because many of us work at home and don't have to go outside even to commute, hop out of the car to go into another building, or what?
So the survey didn't ask people what they were doing mostly with their time, but other statistics by, the Bureau of Labor Statistics asked people how they spend their time. About 9 hours are spent at work, and then when people return home, the majority are doing housework, or if they are having leisure time, they're spending it in front of the TV. So, it's something we all experience where we get up early, we get in the car, we go straight to work, we spend all day there, we rarely leave our desks, and we go straight home and we just crash out on the couch, and you don't see the sun and you don't breathe fresh air. And every day, this is every day, right? We say to ourselves, oh, tomorrow, or I'll do it at the weekend, but we just are overworked and tired.
Wow. I hate to even ask, how much leisure time are we spending in front of the TV on a daily basis?
So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, adults tend to spend about 3 hours, which I guess in the grand scheme of things you think is not enough. But if you think about what else you'd be doing in those 3 hours, I often say to myself, like, okay, let me just go take a 10-minute walk outside or something. And it totally changes my mood and really energizes me. And oftentimes we're sitting on the couch and we're like, this is just, I don't have the energy to move. But that's making us less energized about moving.
I'm a believer in that too. Yeah, the potential problems here for so much indoor time are what, Laura?
I don't think we have to think about the potential problems we're seeing them. We have very high rates of obesity. We have very high rates of depression that are continuing to increase. And among teenagers and young adults, the amount of time that they spend on their cell phones, which again, you know, it may not be a TV screen because who's watching TV anymore? We're streaming on our devices, but we're spending time just sitting and just staring at electronics, and it's affecting our mood and it's affecting our physical body. We're overweight. We're not exercising. And probably also, I mean, if people are like me, you're snacking in front of the TV too.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Kelly, health reporter at The Washington Times. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark, but shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock identity theft protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware or emerging viruses. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now and get an additional 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com and enter the promo code Gordon. That's promo code Gordon at LifeLock.com for an additional 10% off.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday, May 17. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The U.S. moves forward with plans for the summit with North Korea. A Senate Intel committee differs from a House panel regarding Russian election interference. New disclosure from Trump shows he reimbursed his lawyer for a hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. And ahead of the World Cup next month, Argentina's Soccer Association has published a manual that included advice on how to woo Russian women. It offered gems like, don't treat women as objects. Huh. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. Target is testing a new distribution strategy aimed at speeding up its restocking and making the retailer more nimble at stores and online as it competes with rivals. It's a story by Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith. Jennifer, what are they up to?
So Target is looking at some changes to its supply chain as it's working to become sort of nimbler and compete with both big box retail competitors like Walmart and also with online competitors like Amazon.com. So that's a lot to organize. And so what they're trying out here is a new way of shipping goods to stores, both to restock inventory that has been purchased by people and also for stuff that might be sent out online. So they used to have sort of two separate ways of doing this. You'd either have online fulfillment or distribution to their stores. So they're trying to sort of make that more streamlined, make it more nimble, and also to ship items to stores in smaller quantities than previously, so you don't have giant cases full of water or something clogging up the back room.
But if you're shipping fewer quantities, doesn't that add to your shipping costs if you have to send smaller quantities more often, I guess?
I think what they're trying to do is make sure that they have a much more precise picture of what they need on the demand side. So if for example, maybe they need a case of water, but they only need a couple bottles of ketchup, or if there's a slow-moving item. So instead of just sending mass quantities of everything to the store where, you know, it may sit around, maybe it could be used better used at a different store. You're just trying to send only what stores need, and you're trying to sort of keep that flow of goods moving a little bit more quickly so that you're not out of stock, that you're just sort of more responsive to the dynamics that are happening in terms of what people are buying or what they're ordering online.
Right. Is that something consumers might notice if they walk into a brick-and-mortar Target?
Probably not. Although they did say when they were the executive who was discussing this change did say that they're testing it out at one location in New Jersey, and that's supplying some stores in the area. And thus far, he said that they're having fewer out of stocks, which is when you go and look for something on the shelf and it's not there, and that they're also cutting down on excess inventory in the back room. And that second point is important because Target has been really pushing to use its stores as places to also fulfill online orders. So you might have people packing up stuff that ships from a store, or someone has ordered something online and they're picking it up from the store. So they're trying to also make sure that they're using their back rooms, this real estate, in the most sensible way that they can, not just to sort of have a big, you know, case of something sitting there, have it be something that can help kind of, you know, improve how responsive the company is to their customers.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith. She's written a piece about how Target is trying something called a flow center. It's called Target Tests Retail Flow Center for Faster, Nimbler Distribution. Where is Target, by the way, when it comes to, say, same-day delivery?
Well, they recently bought a company that does a sort of a grocery delivery company. So they're sort of trying to compete with some of their, you know, some of the other folks on that, Amazon and what have you. And I do believe that they're doing same-day delivery in some markets for some items. So, you know, that push is happening as well.
Overall, does Target feel, I don't know, they'll stay with this test for, how does it work, several weeks, several months?
They seem pretty bullish on how it's gone thus far, and they have been, it's part of a broader push to sort of change some of their operations. They're investing something like $7 billion both in improvements to their stores, opening up some smaller format stores, but also sort of making changes to their supply chain to try and make sure that they're, you know, more responsive to the way that people are shopping now, which is increasingly online or increasingly wanting sort of flexibility to buy something online and pick it up in a store. So, you know, I think if they're able to get the kinks out, I don't see why they wouldn't expand it more widely. But, you know, right now it's still in pilot mode. You know, this is something that a lot of brick-and-mortar retailers, you know, might be looking at and wrestling with. Interestingly, you know, the Walgreens drugstore chain, they also do a lot of this. You know, if you've ever been walking down the stores of a drugstore aisles and you see folks opening up totes and they're sort of refilling items, you know, one by one on the shelves, they also do this kind of more precise restocking in some ways because they just don't have rooms. You know, they just don't have room in their storefront.
Jennifer, it's Wall Street Journal reporter Jennifer Smith. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username @GordonDeal. Thanks for being with us. We have finally arrived at Friday Eve. Welcome aboard. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you want a little bling with your hot wings, you're in luck. New York City's newest food craze is apparently 24-karat gold chicken wings. You'll find them at the Ainsworth restaurant. Now, the process of getting golden wings, it starts normal enough. The wings are brined for 12 hours, then coated with a house-made dry rub, baked, flash fried, and then for a finishing touch, coated in a layer of gold dust. But as you might imagine, these wings won't be on the menu for 50-cent wing night. You can get 10 for $45 or 20 for double the price. And if you feel like splurging even further, there's also an option to get 50 plus a bottle of Ace of Spades champagne, the brand owned by Jay-Z, for a cool $1,000.
Wow.
Yes. Now, here is a question that, you know, you and I would not have to deal with this necessarily. But for someone who's going to, you know, pony up $5 a wing for gold-covered wings,
yeah,
is gold dust edible?
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because shouldn't you just take those wings, perhaps, and bring your sifter with you with some water and try to clear the dust off and then go cash in the dust?
Yeah,
right.
You know, one, why would you want to? And two, even, you know, can you? Again, is that something you can ingest without causing a problem later on down the line?
That I don't know.
Yes. So again, something you and I don't have to deal with. I feel like these wings are basically just for Instagramming, right? Seems like that's the whole reason. I don't even know if anyone's even going to eat these. They're just going to take pictures of them and then drink their $1,000 champagne and then go home.
Only in America.
Yeah. Yes. Things are going too well right now, it would appear, that people are buying 24-karat gold wings.
How about cashing in the gold dust, though, with perhaps a scent of
I don't know, barbecue sauce on them. Right.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
your local pawn shop. Go,
yeah.
What do you have there?
Yeah, they might be, it might be a little tainted. And we know, Gordon, that winning $5,000 in a lottery ticket would qualify as a pretty good day. Realizing later that the ticket was actually worth $50,000 would certainly be even better. That's what happened to a Maryland man who told lottery officials he was, understandably, overjoyed when he thought that he'd won $5,000 in a scratch-off ticket that he bought from a gas station. He realized he'd won the $5,000 only after scratching off the first few numbers. He was so over the moon about winning, in fact, that it took him a little while before he scratched off the rest of the ticket to discover the payout was actually 10 times that much, $50,000. The 31-year-old Prince George's County resident, who usually plays the lottery on Fridays, said that winning the big prize feels like a dream. Yes.
I can imagine.
Yes, and a lesson, right? Like something your teacher might have told you to always, you know, finish your work, right?
Yeah. And look for the extra zero.
Right.
Sometimes.
That's also helpful.
Seems to be a big deal here.
Yes.
Let me, we should finish up, by the way, the conversation yesterday with Yanni versus Laurel.
Yes.
And how it seemingly has ended. Now, the discussion has ended because a priest from the Pacific Northwest, which you may have chosen to ignore,
yeah.
Father Paul Pluth,
yes.
says that, in fact, he heard Yanni four times clearly. Now, if a man of the cloth has said
it's
Yanni, it is Yanni. And on top of that, the artist, Yanni,
yes.
says he also heard Yanni.
Done.
So, I mean, that's it. Right.
Discussion of goods, because something needs to end this debate
right.
once and for all. It's run its course, I believe.
Hashtag Laurel does not exist. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for joining us. We've pretty much been given the all clear regarding romaine lettuce. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says it's unlikely that anyone currently has edible romaine lettuce that is contaminated with the toxic strain of E. coli bacteria sickening people across the country. Romaine lettuce has a shelf life of about 21 days. The current outbreak has been traced to the growing region in Yuma, Arizona, the source of virtually all lettuce sold in this country during the winter months. The CDC said yesterday that April 16 was the last day romaine lettuce was harvested there. The CDC says even if you can't confirm where your romaine lettuce is from, you no longer have to throw it away. As of Tuesday, by the way, 172 people in 32 states had been sickened in the outbreak. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
President Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani is urging special counsel Robert Mueller's team to wrap up its investigation on the eve of the probe's one-year anniversary. Giuliani told Fox News Mueller has all the facts to make a decision after 12 months investigating Russian meddling in the election and possible collusion with Trump's campaign.
They should do it today. I mean, as soon as possible. I think that they have the facts from which they can write their report. If you're going to write a fair report, fine, write it. If you're going to write an unfair report, write it. And we will combat it. We're ready to rip it apart.
Giuliani also says Mueller's team has informed Trump's attorneys that they have concluded they cannot indict a sitting president. He says all they get to do is write a report. South Korea says it's pushing to reset high-level talks with North Korea and will communicate closely with Washington and Pyongyang to increase the chances of a successful summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to resolve the standoff over the North's nuclear weapons. The announcement by Seoul's Presidential National Security Council today came a day after North Korea threatened to scrap next month's historic meeting between Trump and Kim. Trump yesterday brushed off North Korea's tough talk.
We'll see what happens. We'll see. Time will tell.
The North also broke off a high-level meeting with South Korea. EPA head Scott Pruitt continues to defend himself against a growing list of allegations involving management missteps and spending at the agency, denying some and deflecting others in a Senate subcommittee hearing yesterday. New Mexico Senator Tom Udall questioned Pruitt.
Did your staff contact realtors and arrange tours for you during working hours? Yes or no?
It's my understanding that all activity there was
yes
on personal
no,
time.
Yes or no, sir? Yes
as I indicated.
No.
It's my understanding that all activity there was on personal time.
It all noted there are 16 federal reviews ongoing of Pruitt's actions. Congratulations, class of 2018. You've hit the jackpot, graduating into the strongest job market in a decade. Career Builder says 80% of the companies it surveyed say they plan to hire college grads this year, up from 60% in 2008. As for the most sought-after majors, business topped the rankings, with more than a third of companies looking to hire grads with a business degree.
Very good. Thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. When the flight staff of Delta Flight 1827 needed a doctor, they got one. In fact, they got the nation's doctor. Yesterday, U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams tweeted that Delta staff on his flight to Jackson, Mississippi, asked if there was a doctor on board to assist in a medical emergency. He jumped in to help. A Delta spokesman told the Washington Post that prior to takeoff, the flight from Fort Lauderdale to Atlanta returned to the gate following a customer illness. Medical assistance was provided by the U.S. Surgeon General, who worked with flight crew to aid the customer. Dr. Adams tweeted, "Patient doing well." Neither the doctor nor the airline revealed what the passenger's medical issue was. An anesthesiologist, Mr. Adams was previously Indiana's health commissioner and in recent years is best known for his response to an HIV outbreak that left 181 people infected in a rural Indiana county. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.